Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 15th. Leaders, community discuss safety. Legacy freshman officials say problems are nationwide. Parents want them fixed. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Legacy Freshman High School was the topic of a special community meeting Tuesday evening at the MLK Center in East Midland. Legacy Freshman Principal Candace Warren claimed that recent issues on campus are common in schools all around the country, while parents and community members in attendance claimed there are problems that must be fixed on campus. Warren focused on the positive aspects of Legacy Freshman High School during the meeting, which took place in response to recent events at the school. Those events included an assault of a student by another in the girls' restroom that was shared on social media, and a threatening text message involving a firearm that was sent by students to classmates in jest. Warren briefly talked about the fight that took place that was shared on social media, saying that tensions had been brewing in the afternoon the day before the event. She said that the school called freshman students and parents into Warren's office the morning after the fight to find out who was involved the afternoon before. While this was happening, the feuding female students went into a restroom to engage in what seemed to be a pre-planned physical altercation, she said. After the fight was broken up, a parent in Warren's office who was told about the situation became upset, fainted, and their head collided with a cabinet. Emergency medical services was called, and the campus was placed on a secure status where instruction continues, but the hallways are to be kept clear, according to the principal. Legacy freshman parents in attendance would later disagree with Warren's description of the situation as a girl fight, calling it a, quote, violent, scary assault and a brawl, end quote. Warren detailed safety measures they have in place, rewarding students for good behavior moving forward, and commended Legacy staff members. Following her opening remarks, the audience was able to make comments or ask questions to District 2 City Council Member John Norman, District 1 Trustee Michael Booker, or Legacy Freshman Administration. Parents, elected officials, and concerned community members voiced their opinions, focusing less on the positives that Legacy provides and acknowledging that there is an issue regarding safety on campus. Quote, I'm kind of mad. I'm kind of fed up, one Legacy parent said. I have a baby there right now, and I have a baby coming up, and if I've got to piss off a few people to get some changes made, then I'm going to do that, end quote. The mother claimed that the first step to figuring out a solution at the school is acknowledging that there is a problem and that using a community meeting to address the good about the school will not aid in minimizing recurring troubling events in the future. She added that she couldn't sleep the night after the fight took place between the two students and claimed she represented much of the community in her concern. She said that one full-time law enforcement officer in the school for 1,100 students is not a large enough law enforcement presence, and breaking up altercations and locking down campus in the event of an emergency isn't part of a teacher's job description. She continued to say that the proposed addition of a hall monitor in the school was like, quote, putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, end quote. Audience members continued to speak for about an hour. Many stressed the importance of good parenting, stating that bad behavior typically begins at the household. Quote, teach your kids how to behave, teach them manners, and you're not doing that, but you want to blame others. Look at yourselves, a Midland church leader said. Some spoke about ways to reduce cell phone usage in school that allow students to engage in activities like sharing videos of a fight or sending a phony photo of a gun. Quote, "My kids put their cell phone in the bucket every morning that I stuff in the closet. They can get it at the end of the day," a Midland sixth grade teacher said. Others raised their concern about poor communication between administration and parents, especially during the confusing situation surrounding the secure status placed on the school earlier in the year. In addition, many in attendance said that legacy freshmen should be moved into the high school campus with the sophomores, juniors, and seniors. The president of Midland's chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People said that as Midland grows, schools should be built to overcome student population inequities, as some Midland schools are underpopulated with students, and other schools are seeing behavioral problems from students because it is difficult to keep tabs on so many given their staff size. Top honors for Trinity students. Sophie Raj named National Merit semifinalists. Four other students also earn honors. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Two students from the Trinity School were named National Merit semifinalists. The National Merit Scholarship Corporation reported this week there were 16,000 semifinalists across the nation, and two from Midland County, Trinity's Rush Sukumar and Sophie Sharam. The announcement means that Trinity has had National Merit semifinalists during two of the last 3 years. In 2021, Midland County's lone semifinalist was Danielle E. Bryden of Trinity. Quote, "We are extremely proud to have these students represent Trinity School and the whole West Texas region as National Merit semifinalists," said Tim Jones, head of Upper School. Additionally, Trinity announced Wednesday that four students have been named College Board National Recognition Program recipients based on their academic achievements in school and outstanding performance on the PSAT, NMSQT, PSAT, and/or AP exams. Trinity reported Alec Venegas received the National Hispanic Recognition Award. Ezekiel Bohomo, Christian Gibbons, and Lorraine Oluwakeri all received the National African American Recognition Award. Quote, "More well-deserved recognition for outstanding achievement," Jones said. "Each of our students has special gifts and talents, and we are always delighted for students to be recognized accordingly," end quote. Midland ISD has not had a National Merit semifinalist in four of the last 5 years. Commentary. The many energy conflicts of Biden. A dynamic SPR adds to the sense that we're in a new age of intervention in global energy. The story was written by Liam Denning of Bloomberg. The phrase oil market should always come with an asterisk. Oil's history is a succession of long periods where some actors sought to control prices, punctuated by occasional periods of free-for-all, usually coincided with crashes. Standard Oil, the Seven Sisters, the Texas Railroad Commission, and OPEC were would-be cartels. Today, we have OPEC Plus, wherein Saudi Arabia seeks to nudge prices this way or that, but usually up, using spare capacity, and Russia, with slightly less finesse, invades neighbors and threatens cutoffs. And we also have Uncle Sam. Bloomberg News reports that the Biden administration is considering buying crude to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve when prices drop below $80 a barrel. NYMEX near-month futures are just under $90 right now. This is not a complete surprise. Almost 140 million barrels, or 24%, have been drained from the SPR since March, when the International Energy Agency agreed an emergency release in response to Russia's attack on Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Department of Energy has proposed modifying its procedures for refilling the SPR, including the use of fixed price contracts for future delivery. Before getting to the specifics of that, it's important to acknowledge the U.S. has long been a huge interventionist in the oil market. How could it not, given it's the biggest consumer and the de facto security guarantor of the seaborne oil trade and prominent Middle Eastern producers? In recent years, an ever-increasing proportion of global oil production has become subjected to U.S. sanctions. The championing of markets to counter price fixers has given way to dreams of energy dominance. Diplomacy, both quiet and overt, like Biden's recent and reluctant visit to Riyadh, is a constant in this most vital of markets. The novel aspect of this new approach to the SPR is the signaling of an effective put in oil prices, the reported $80 level. This is explicitly a bone thrown to U.S. oil producers, as the White House laid out in July. By instead allowing for the price to be fixed at the time the transaction is executed between the parties, this regulatory change would provide greater certainty to producers regarding the revenues they could expect to generate if they produce more crude in the short term. Biden has been attempting to pull off a fiendishly difficult balancing act that can be summed up as drill, baby, don't drill. His green agenda explicitly seeks to drastically curb oil demand over time, but as inflation and the Ukraine war have reminded us, there is also a critical need to maintain supply of the energy we rely on today. Contradictions abound. Biden has sought to slow drilling and launched verbal volleys at the oil industry for profiteering. Yet he has also sought to encourage oil production, including with these fixed-price purchase proposals, and in releasing strategic barrels, ease pump prices, even as he tries to foster a switch to electric vehicles. There is also something a bit weird about refilling the SPR with oil just so it can be disposed of again under future congressionally mandated sales. Why not just net off this year's sales? On that point, Washington-based analytics firm Clearview Energy Partners says the desire to encourage domestic production, among other reasons, may make it politically useful to take the convoluted approach. The SPR has long been a strange feature of the oil landscape, in part because the president has such discretion over it, and there is never a consensus on what constitutes an emergency. Even a major land war in Europe, combined with post-pandemic disruptions, can be deemed a fig leaf for an unpopular president trying to cram down pump prices ahead of midterms. For decades, the SPR has been largely seen as dead oil, a number on a ledger, inherently political, that most analysts backed out of their inventory calculations. If we are witnessing the SPR moving from an untouched savings account to something more like a checking account, that has potentially far-reaching implications. For one thing, analysts would have to stop backing out the SPR, as would the industry itself in judging the right level of commercial stocks to hold and finance. More importantly, the U.S. will have joined Saudi Arabia in explicitly attempting to manage the oil market with the release or withdrawal of liquidity, and luckily, they always see eye to eye. China, too, as it happens, which has this past decade also put a floor under the market by filling its own strategic reserve when prices softened, although not explicitly as a favor to domestic producers. In a way, shale producers should find at least one thing to like about this approach. Investors gave up on the oil price option embedded in producers' stock prices several years ago. Stability is the prize these days. rather than the prospect of future surge pricing. I'm half joking. The problem is that the SPR, always primarily a political tool, would now be a more actively used one, and, given the state of our politics, a rather unpredictable one. If a recession hits, or deepens, depending on your current view, and oil crashes to, say, $60, how would fixed-price purchases at $80 a barrel look then? How should producers view the SPR as Congress and the White House shift around, or not, every 2 to 4 years? The underlying issue of needing to reduce fossil fuel consumption while keeping enough capacity around to get there remains, as does the outsized influence of gasoline prices on our elections. These are, again, not entirely new risks, but latent ones, amplified by the breaking of the taboo on using those dormant barrels. There is no magic level for the SPR, especially for a country that has transformed from the biggest net importer of oil in the world to the biggest producer and a small net exporter. Rather, coming alongside a host of market interventions in the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere, a dynamic SPR adds to the sense that we have entered a new age of intervention in global energy. This is, by reason of its extent, a sea change. While it has its roots in everything from climate change to the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, the primary motivation is to shield consumers from raw market forces. That can be justified in an emergency. As a permanent state of affairs, we can confidently expect unintended consequences. Liam Denning is a Bloomberg opinion columnist covering energy and commodities. A former investment banker, he was editor of the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column and a reporter for the Financial Times' Lex column. This column does not necessarily reflect the opinion of the editorial board or Bloomberg LP and its owners.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, September 15th. In brief, MPD says pedestrian dies on Loop 250 feeder. A 57-year-old Lubbock man died Tuesday night after attempting to cross a Loop 250 feeder road, according to Midland Police. MPD officials stated that at approximately 10 p.m., officers were dispatched to a pedestrian crash located in the 4300 block of West Loop 250 North. An investigation showed that a male, Tony Ray Vance, was attempting to cross the South Service Road of Loop 250 on foot and failed to yield the right-of-way to vehicle traffic, MPD reported. Vance suffered fatal injuries as a result of the collision and was pronounced deceased on the scene. Next of kin has been notified. Big Spring man dies in collision on I-20. An 83-year-old Big Spring man died Monday after a collision west of Big Spring on Interstate 20, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Wednesday that Thomas McCoy Kelly was traveling westbound in the eastbound lanes on I-20 around 10:25 p.m. Monday. Kelly's Dodge Journey collided with the 2020 Freightliner with trailer. Kelly succumbed to his injuries sustained at the crash, according to DPS. Kelly was wearing a seatbelt. The driver of the Freightliner was not injured. The accident happened a quarter of a mile west of Big Spring in Howard County. El Paso woman dies in I-20 crash. A 23-year-old El Paso woman died Sunday following a one-vehicle crash on Interstate 20 west of Stanton, according to Department of Public Safety officials. DPS reported Ashley Hernandez died after being transported to Martin County Hospital. A 3-year-old was transported to Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock in serious condition. DPS reported the accident happened around 2:30 p.m. Sunday in Martin County, 2.5 miles west of Stanton. Preliminary information revealed that Hernandez was driving a 2006 Toyota Tacoma west on I-20 when she fell asleep while traveling at highway speeds and partially crossed into the center median, according to DPS. Hernandez then overcorrected back onto the roadway, causing the vehicle to roll over multiple times. Hernandez was wearing a seatbelt, according to DPS. The three-year-old was not, according to the report. MISD again without national merit semifinalists, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD will be without a national merit semifinalist for the fourth time in 5 years. The National Merit Scholarship Corporation reported Wednesday that only Trinity School was representing Midland County on the list of semifinalists from around the nation. The corporation reported that high school juniors entered the 2023 National Merit Scholarship Program by taking the 2021 Preliminary SAT National Merit Scholarship Qualifying Test, PSAT-MMSQT, which served as an initial screen of program entrance. The nationwide pool of semifinalists, representing less than 1% of U.S. high school seniors, includes the highest scoring entrants in each state. The number of semifinalists in a state is proportional to the state's percentage of the national total of graduating seniors. Midland ISD last had a semifinalist in 2019, Hayden Hamm of Lee High School. The one semifinalist over a five-year period is comparable to Greenwood ISD and two behind Trinity School of Midland. Reporter Telegram records show that going back to 2008, an average of two students attending Midland County schools earned National Merit semifinalist status. Between 2002 and 2007, that average number of semifinalists from Midland County was greater than 10 students a year. Across the region, seven students from Amarillo were named semifinalists, all Amarillo ISD students, 10 from Lubbock, 9 Lubbock ISD students, and 3 from Abilene, Abilene High and Wiley High students. San Angelo and Odessa were without National Merit semifinalists. A look at the list shows larger population metropolitan areas dominated the list. For instance, 6 high schools in Sugarland combined for more than 70 semifinalists. The three largest high schools in Plano combined for around 100. 11 high schools inside Frisco combined for more than 120. Westwood High School in Austin reached around 80, and Coppell High School collected more than 30. Midland Reporter Telegram opinion page, Thursday, September 15th. Opinion extra. Bond relitigating doesn't fix legacy freshmen's problems, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD needs freshmen on the main high school campuses, but those who choose to use the community meeting about the legacy freshman high school as a bond push were wrong. The event at the MLK Junior Center in East Midland was worthwhile, although I can't say for sure what the plan is for school leaders or the community. What was apparent was there were a few people, including one running for school board, who chose to use this forum as an opportunity to put problems of legacy freshman high school on the backs of those who didn't vote for the bond or relitigate the bond of 2019. Let's be clear. The bond in 2019 did not fail because Midlanders liked the idea of freshman campuses. It failed for a number of reasons, including the actions of a superintendent no longer with the school district. I could go on, but I have been careful to use this space during the past 18 months to talk more about positives of the district, its leadership, and the board. The same could not be said about those who said that a problem at Legacy Freshman High School was an electoral issue. That is not the case. How do I know this? Because even had the bond of 2019 passed, Legacy Freshman High School would still be in place right now. I also know that new buildings do not guarantee student success. They don't help bridge the gap between rich and economic disadvantaged students. They don't help guarantee students are fed appropriately to spend 8 hours on a school campus. They don't guarantee that a student has been taught how to conduct himself or herself. And they don't mean conditions and personnel will be in place to help a school combat fights, disruptions, or these social media events. What new buildings will help do is shape the district for the next 30 years. There are cool opportunities ahead for Midlanders, like the building of a new elementary school in Northeast Midland, that, at the same time, will open up a neighborhood school in East Midland. There are other opportunities that will provide needed improvements to current facilities in the district and improve CTE and other programs that are right for Midland now and in the future. Our imagination to shape the future will be our only limitation. For those paying attention, there is a foundation being built in Midland. Should the school board, now or later, get the superintendent selection right and continue the momentum in place, we will have the opportunity to build up rather than dig out. We haven't been able to say that in more than 15 years. But let's look forward. Let's point to a school system that has freshmen on the same campus as sophomores, juniors, and seniors within 10 years. Grade reconfiguration is the right thing to do. Let's also make sure we can provide growth numbers to the community that are reliable in a post-COVID Midland. My expectation, those will be available sooner rather than later. But let's also remember, relitigating the election of 2019 will not help progress take place now or in the future. Don't point the finger at people, including those previous opponents working side by side with district officials on facility needs moving forward. If there are problems with student behavior at Legacy Freshman or another secondary school, let's attack the problem like we have academic performance. Leadership helped change the course of the district there. I believe the same is true when it comes to behavior. Obituaries from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, September 15th. Annie Lou Hudson Frisson. Annie Lou Hudson Frisson was born on January 6th, 1948, to the late Leon Hudson and Willie Mae Gray in Grosbeck, Texas. Ms. Annie leaves to cherish her memories her husband of 37 years, Lee Frisson Jr., son Derek Lord Niblett and wife Tanya, brother Clyde Wayne Gary, Odessa, and a host of nieces, nephews, and extended family and friends. Visitation will be held on Friday, September 16th from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m., with the family receiving friends from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Saturday, September 17th at 10 a.m. at Antioch Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at asanchezTFH.com. Jackie Eugene Covey. Jackie Eugene Covey, 66, of Odessa, passed away on the 11th of September peacefully in his home. Jackie was born in Durant, Oklahoma, to Bill and Margie Covey. Jackie is survived by his wife of 48 years, Debbie Covey, daughter Christy DeArmond, daughter Jody Braun, and son-in-law Kyle Braun of Weatherford, Texas, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Furthermore, he is loved by his many nieces and nephews. Visitation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, September 16th at Hope Alive Church, 305 East 19th Street, Odessa. A celebration of Jackie's life will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday, September 17th at Hope Alive Church, with Craig and Cliff DeArmond officiating. Services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation. Services in Midland, to place online condolences, please visit willowbrk.com. Larry Lesby. On September 10th, Larry N. Lesby, beloved husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and friend to many, passed away at the age of 76 after a long battle with cancer. He was born in Plainview, Texas, to N.A. and Doshi Pearl Lesby on March 10th, 1946. He leaves behind his wife Judy, son Kyle, and daughter Kelly Lesby Chisholm. He had six grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Preceding him in death were his parents, his son Craig, his father-in-law Howard Lawrence and wife Barbary, and three sisters, Barbara Lawrence, Linda Jones, and Patsy Renee Lesby. There will be a celebration of life later at First United Methodist Church in Ballinger, Texas. Lang Funeral Home will be assisting. In lieu of flowers, donations to the Scottish Rite, Ballinger Cares, Meals on Wheels, or your favorite charity will be appreciated. Michael Mikey Steve Johnson Jr. Michael Mikey Steve Johnson Jr., age 37 of Lubbock, passed from this life on Wednesday, September 7th. A funeral service will be held at 12:30 p.m. Monday, September 19th at North's Funeral Home, 242 Orange Street, Abilene, with Pastor Jamie McCravey officiating. Burial will follow at Texas State Veterans Cemetery, Abilene. Mikey was born on August 12, 1985, in Lubbock, Texas, to Steve Johnson and Cindy Johnson. Mikey is survived by his parents, children, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, and many friends. Condolences for the family may be left at northsfuneralhome.com. Patty Mae Anderson. Patty Mae Anderson, 89, of Midland, passed away Sunday, September 11th at her residence. Patty was born December 4th, 1932, to Reeves and Barney Smith in Brownfield, Texas. Patty married her husband, Bill N. Anderson, June 20th, 1969. She was preceded in death by her husband, parents, sister, Christine Waddle, brother, Calvin Smith, and daughter, Greta Anderson Kirby. Patty is survived by her son, Maurice Story of Dallas, daughter, Jan Anderson Hunt, and husband, Daryl of El Paso, sister, Dorothy McQuarrie of Midland, grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 15th, 2022. Community Calendar. Casa de Amiga, Familia Fest Friday. COM Aquatics, The Big Show Saturday. The Destination, Tall City Blues Fest, September 24th. Downtown Lions Club Building, Lions Pancake Breakfast, September 24th. Hispanic Cultural Center, Midland Northside Lions Club's 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review, October 15th. At the Horseshoe, Wine, Women, and Shoes, Thursday. Showbiz West Texas, Saturday. Ray Lana, September 24th through 28th. At Midland Community Theater, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, at the Maybe Theater 2, Friday through Sunday, September 23rd, 24th, 30th, and October 1st. Midland Shared Spaces, Dueling Piano Event, September 22nd. Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., Saturdays. St. Anne's Catholic Church, St. Anne's Fair, September 22nd through 25th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Tall City Brewing Invitational, Saturday. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Felipe Esparza, Friday. Distinguished Lecture Series, Robert M. Edsel, September 27th. And Kevin James, September 30th. At Windwalker Farms, Freedom Service Dogs Clay Shoot, Friday. Black Gold Registered Shoot, September 24th and 25th. Community Roundup. Big Appetites, Little Bites for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Chef Vanessa Mata are offering Big Appetites, Little Bites from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Saturday for Midlanders wanting to learn how to create tasty Asian-style appetizers and to learn about the need for volunteers at Big Brothers, Big Sisters. The event is scheduled to be held at the West Texas Food Bank Kitchen, 1601 West Cliff Drive. Mata will walk attendees through making egg rolls, spring rolls, and crab rangoons. Cost for the event is $15 per person to help cover food costs. Reservations must be received by 6 p.m. Thursday and can be made by emailing info@bbbspermianbasin.org or by calling 432-687-0195. While attendees cook and eat their appetizers, staff from Big Brothers Big Sisters will briefly talk about the need for volunteers and the program. 22-a-day walk and ride. The 22-a-day walk and ride event will be held September 24th at the VFW Post 4149 at 409 Veterans Air Park Lane to bring awareness to veteran suicide. The event will include a walk to start at 9 a.m., lunch at 11 a.m., and the ride at 12:30 p.m. Walk registration is $20 and includes a t-shirt. For those participating in the walk, the meal is $5, and a pin can be bought for $5. Texas Size Garage Sale. Senior Life Midland will have its Texas Size Garage Sale from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. October 7th and 8th and the 11th and 12th of October at 407 East Scarborough. The garage sale provides one-third of the funds needed for Senior Life Midland to fund its Meals on Wheels program. There is a VIP shopping experience where people can get a sneak peek of the items. That will take place September 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. The cost is $50. Call 432-689-6693 for more information. City of Midland Job Fairs. The City of Midland Animal Services will host two job fairs, September 19th and 23rd, at the Animals Service Center, 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. The job fairs are scheduled to take place from 3 to 6 p.m. September 19th and from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on September 23rd. Interviews will be held for animal services officers and animal care specialists, multiple positions, records specialists, and part-time positions. Richard Milburn Academy Hearing. Richard Milburn Academy Techs, Inc. will host a public hearing at 10 a.m. September 30th to discuss the district charter school's performance on the state's financial accountability system. First report, Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas, for the 2021-22 ratings based on fiscal year 2021 data. A financial management report will be distributed and public participation in the discussion is invited. The meeting will be conducted via video conference call from 13003 Jones Maltzberger Road in San Antonio and will be broadcast to each RMA campus. Please visit the RMA website at rmaschools.org for additional details or call 830-557-6181. Casa de Amigos of Midland presents Familia Fest. Familia Fest is set for 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Casa de Amigos, 1101 Garden Lane. The free event helps celebrate Mexican Independence Day and will include live music and the Hispanic Cultural Center's Folklorico dancers. Casa de Amigos offers numerous services and resources for the Midland community, and Midlanders are invited to learn more about what the organization has to offer. For more information, visit CasaDeAmigosMidland.org. scholarships for writers workshops. There will be full-ride scholarships to students in West Texas high schools, colleges, and the University of Texas Permian Basin, as well as to 4 teachers of English or deserving youth to the annual Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th at Midland College. The Permian Basin Bookies are conducting this conference to benefit the writing community. This includes writers of all ages. The workshop will also include numerous authors and agents willing to offer suggestions to all potential writers. Attendees can schedule one-on-one pitches to agents for $35 per session on a first-come, first-served basis. For a full list of events and participating authors and agents, visit pbbookies.com/Permian-Basin-Writers-Workshop. Pink in the Park, October 15th. While it's no secret that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, not many know that Pink in the Park is put on by and for breast cancer survivors. The event will be held from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 15th at Midland's Centennial Park. There will be a local breast cancer survivor sharing her experience, a fashion show, raffle items, a food truck, ice cream, music, local community partners, and a survivor lab. For more information, visit giftofhopetx.org. Calendar. Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Schaap Center. Free. Lion's Pancake Breakfast, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. September 24th at Midland Downtown Lions Club, 200 Plaza Street. UTPB Distinguished Lecture Series presents Robert M. Edsel, 7 p.m. September 27th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th at Midland College. Pink in the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 15th at Centennial Park. Midland Northside Lions Club, 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m. October 15th at the Hispanic Cultural Center. West Texas Women's Symposium, October 19th and 20th at the Bush Convention Center. Midland College to host Greatest Piano Man on Saturday. The Greatest Piano Men event will be held Saturday at Schaap Center on the Midland College campus. The Midland College Foundation and the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series is presenting the free event that celebrates some of the world's greatest pianists and showmen, from Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Ray Charles to Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Billy Joel, and even Liberace, according to the college. The show features storytelling, video, female backup singers, and 25 hit songs, including Good Golly Miss Molly, Superstition, Rocket Man, Tiny Dancer, and New York State of Mind, Midland College reported. This Las Vegas production is scheduled to begin at 7:30 p.m. Preferred seating is available for Midland College distinguished donors and friends of the series. For more information about becoming a Midland College distinguished donor and friend of the series, contact the Midland College Foundation office, foundation@midland.edu, or call 432-685-4526. More talks about directing MCT Fall Musical by Morgan Taylor Thomas. For 27 years, Carl Beery Moore taught theater arts to aspiring actors, actresses, playwrights, and directors. Covering a large portion of the Midland-Odessa area, Greenwood High School, Legacy High School, Trinity School, and his last, Odessa High School, the creative Moore made a mark in the community similar to one he once called home. Originally from New England, born in Maine and raised in New Hampshire, Moore moved to El Paso in the fifth grade, staying in the border city through high school. In his early 20s, the artist started to join local theaters, acting in lead and supporting roles, and eventually earning a spot in the red fold-out director's chair. With strong roots in the game, nothing feels more familiar to Moore than the theater. So when the Midland Community Theater reached out to the Craftsman about leading the dramatic vision of their 2022 fall musical production, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, the choice seemed clear. My answer is always yes, because Midland Community Theater is a second home for my wife Jane and me, Moore told the Reporter Telegram. We really do love it, and it keeps us very active. We both volunteer in the box office, concession stands, and costume shop. From a smooth auditioning process to being able to work choreography with friend and colleague Clayton Cross, a former Pickwick player and Midland native, Moore finds joy and excitement in the behind-the-scenes work, especially with a cast so perfectly fit for their roles, making his home at the theater all the more obvious. I love directing because you really get the opportunity to put your own idea on how the story is being told. You're more in control, making sure the author's intent is being honored through the whole thing, Moore said. If you're looking for an evening in which you're going to be laughing and not thinking about, for 1 minute, those situations going on that are weighing heavy on your back, come see this show. You'll completely forget your troubles. Following the scheming manipulation of one man to another, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum includes audience interaction and an intimate seating arrangement, perfect for a night full of good times and musical mayhem. Tickets can be bought at mctmidland.org.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, September 15th. Record oil production forecast. Problems remain with skilled labor, supply chain, equipment, and service costs. By Bob Campbell. Jazzed by strong worldwide demand and crackerjack technology, the Permian Basin will set an all-time record for oil production in October. That's according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, which says the basin's barrels per day output will hit 5.413 million next month, after cresting up from 5.2 and 5.3 million BPD this summer. Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Ed Longenecker said Wednesday that the industry is in the early stages of a long-term upcycle, and the Permian Basin will continue to play an important role in meeting growing energy demand. Despite some of the challenges facing Texas producers today, short-term oil fundamentals remain very strong, Longenecker said from Austin. China will inevitably recover from its draconian lockdowns, but the timing will be important. Low global oil inventories, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve release winding down, continued geopolitical disruptions, and limited growth from OPEC will also contribute to higher commodity prices, which should drive continued production growth in the basin. Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President Jason Moglen said this region continues to be the envy of the world as the most prolific basin. This is thanks to the people and producers who have made the right decisions to meet our state and international energy demands, Moglen said Wednesday from Austin. Texas is better for it and should find opportunities to give back to the region that has given so much, with additional funding for roads, education, and water infrastructure. Steve Pruitt, CEO of Elevation Resources in Midland and Vice Chairman of the Washington, D.C.-based Independent Petroleum Association of America, said conditions are generally encouraging, but there are serious problems. The Permian Basin's independent oil and gas producers are doing all we can to increase production as we have economic incentives to do so, Pruitt said Wednesday. However, headwinds caused by skilled labor shortages, supply chain disruptions, service and tubular goods inflation, and adverse federal executive and legislative branches and federal agencies charged with curtailing oil and natural gas development will constrain growth in Permian and domestic production. Because the industry must first overcome declining rates on existing shale wells, growth beyond 6 million BPD in the basin will be difficult with what most operators are signaling to be a flat rig count in the Permian next year, Pruitt said. While the Permian rig count has grown from a low of 123 active rigs in August 2020, to 346 rigs at the end of August 2022, we are far off the recent peak of 490 rigs active as of November 30, 2018. The constraints previously cited, along with eroding economics with continually rising well construction costs, will throttle growth in the rig count. Operators are reluctant to increase long-term investments with volatile commodity prices, limited access to capital, and a hostile regulatory environment. Street Racer Gets Max After Crash Kills Four by Kim Smith. An Odessa man who killed four people while street racing 4 years ago received the maximum possible sentence Wednesday of 20 years in prison. It took an Ector County jury 2.5 hours to decide Albertico Valenzuela's fate. He'll be eligible for parole after serving 5 years. Valenzuela was 17 years old when he happened upon El Paso resident Christian Flores, 22, while driving west down West 16th Street on October 1, 2018. The two were both driving Dodge Challengers and began racing each other. Texas Department of Public Safety accident reconstructionist Sergeant John Schock told jurors Tuesday the data recorders in both Challengers showed the young men were traveling at 111 miles an hour when they crossed Farm to Market 1936 and hit the dip in the road. Flores' car went airborne, causing it to accelerate to 125 miles per hour before landing. The data recorders show the cars were traveling at 108 to 109 miles an hour when Valenzuela's car veered into Flores' car, causing it to skid sideways into the oncoming lane of traffic, Schock said. Less than 2 seconds later, Flores' car careened into Araceli Galbadon, who was driving 10 miles below the speed limit with her three children. She had no time to react, Schock said. Her car was sent backwards, spinning 180 degrees and hitting a pickup parked in a game room lot before stopping. Galbadon, 47, was killed along with two of her children, Cassandra de la Garza, 20, and Elias de la Garza, 9. Sergio de la Garza, 15, broke one of his clavicles and suffered extensive injuries to his intestines and kept him in the hospital for a month. Flores was also killed. Sergio de la Garza, now 20, testified Tuesday the family was 5 minutes from home after a trip to Mexico at the time of the crash. He awakened to his mother's scream seconds before impact, her arm reaching across him to protect him. Valenzuela pleaded guilty to 4 counts of racing on a highway Monday, and jurors were asked to decide if the 21-year-old should be placed on probation or if he should receive a prison sentence of between 2 and 20 years. The maximum amount of time Valenzuela could have been placed on probation was 10 years. Prosecutors Greg Barber and Carmen Villalobos asked the jurors to sentence Valenzuela to the maximum. They noted that less than 2 years after the crash, Valenzuela was arrested for crashing into a fence while drunk. One of his tires blew and he continued to drive on just the rim. Villalobos reminded jurors of the video they watched of Valenzuela's DWI arrest and how sloshed he was. "We're not saying he's a monster. He's the worst person in the world," Villalobos said. "Yes, he's young, but actions have consequences." Barber noted that during the jury selection process, they all said street racing was an issue in Ector County. "Now's your chance to do something about it. Now's the time you get to send a message," Barber said. Defense attorney Philip Wildman asked for mercy for his client, noting his age at the time of the event. Valenzuela's fiancée, mother, aunt, and employer all testified on his behalf, describing him as a caring, loving, and responsible young man who is a role model for his younger brothers. They said he consistently holds a job and is helping raise his pregnant fiancée's daughters. "A sentence of probation gives him a chance. It gives him a chance at a lot of things, a chance to grow up, mature, be a better man," Wildman said. "Valenzuela already isn't the same person he was," Wildman said. The defense attorney also reminded the jurors Valenzuela stayed at the scene, called 911, and flagged down troopers who didn't even know another vehicle was involved in the crash. Valenzuela testified earlier Wednesday that the day of the crash started out like any other day. Then, a senior at Odessa High School, Valenzuela said he went to school and his job at an auto parts store. After work, he went to his sister's to celebrate his dad's birthday and then stopped off at Walmart on Loop 338 to pick up dog food. He was on his way home when he came across Flores. He said the older man started revving his engine when they came alongside each other and they started to race. He testified they collided about a minute later, and he truly believed it was Flores who hit him, not the other way around. He also said he had no idea how fast they'd been going. When asked why he repeatedly told law enforcement officers they hadn't been racing, Valenzuela blamed his age. "I was 17. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I was terrified," Valenzuela said. Valenzuela, who turns 22 in November, told his attorney the crash has been hard to deal with, and he has woken up screaming and sweaty from nightmares. He no longer drives on West 16th Street, he said. At the time of his DWI arrest in July 2020, Valenzuela said alcohol was his best friend. "It was the only way I could deal with everything," Valenzuela told Wildman. He is now trying to become a better person, role model, significant other, and father, he testified. Under cross-examination from Barber, Valenzuela admitted he had raced other cars prior to the crash and knew the dip was in the road. He acknowledged his behavior was not acceptable. When asked what he'd like to say to the victim's family, Valenzuela said he is remorseful, but no words can justify what happened that night, and no words can help them recover from their loss. Valenzuela said he was asking for a second chance. "Were you thinking about second chances the night you were driving around drunk on three wheels?" Barber asked him. During his closing arguments, Barber hammered on Valenzuela's decision to drink and drive after having killed four people. Even if he needed alcohol to cope with a crash, he could have stayed home, Barber said. "Is that matured? Is that changed?" Barber said. Valenzuela spoke about having nightmares, but they should think about Sergio de la Garza and how he's living with the images of that night, Barber said. Barber showed jurors a picture of Araceli Gabaldon with her children, taken months before the crash, apologized, and then flashed their autopsy pictures on the courtroom screen. "When you have people take actions like Mr. Valenzuela, these become the pictures," Barber said. Again, Barber urged the maximum sentence. "Mr. Wildman is asking you not to judge him for 2 days out of his life. But think about the final 2 seconds of Araceli Galbadon's life as she put her arm across her son, Sergio," Barber asked the jurors. Following the jury's decision, two of Araceli Galbadon's nieces spoke about the huge hole that has been left in their entire family's heart. They described Galbadon as the matriarch of the family, who could always be counted on for her advice and support. They spoke about the fact Cassandra's boyfriend had to put the engagement ring he planned to give her at Christmas into her coffin instead, and how they were convinced Elias, an innocent angel, was going to be the first doctor in the family. I pray for the day I can forgive you because I don't want to carry this hate on my heart forever, one of the nieces said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.